From the underground bunker of the Civitas Studio in Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Civitalk with your hosts, Brooke Medina and Ray Nothstein. We're here to connect culture with civics, making it relevant to your daily life. And dare we say, existence, at a time where too many are triggered and offended. So, relax. But buckle up and let's wade into the deep end of what's really happening in your old North State.
Welcome to another edition of Civitalk. We are recording on Brooke's birthday, and we also have Donald in the studio today. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff. We're going to be talking about Donald's debate the other night on voter ID. We're going to talk about Hurricane Special Session, Judge Kavanaugh, the latest on that. And of course, we're just going to have a fun time today, kick it around. So,
Brooke, woohoo, sounds good. Brooke, I'm glad you told everybody it was my birthday.
Yep.
I expect gifts in the mail.
Well, you turned 25 today, right?
Yeah, Donald, you knew it.
I thought it was 45.
Ray, you just shut up.
Just
hush. Just hush. Okay, yeah, so super excited about it being my birthday and getting to record this fun, I would say just there's a lot of trending things that we're going to be discussing today. And like Ray said, we're going to kick it off, though, with talking a little bit about my vacation. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to hear about...
Because everybody's been dying to hear.
Not so much about Hershey, but I want to keep it as an uplifted, philosophical podcast. I want to hear more about Gettysburg.
Okay. Yeah, well, so have either one of you been to Gettysburg before?
Yes.
Okay. What were your thoughts on it?
I mean, Gettysburg is it's the monumental piece of the Civil War, right? It's commonly referred to in history books as the high tide of the Confederacy. And so, you know, if you're a history buff or at least a Civil War buff, you have to go to Gettysburg. And what's significant about Gettysburg is not only was it the bloodiest battle of the Civil War, but just the sheer expanse of land that it happened on. I mean, it was a running battle for 2 days. And then when it was finally a pitched battle on day two and three, it took over several square miles, like I think like 25 or 30 square miles.
And also kind of a cool thing is that Eisenhower retired at Gettysburg. So a lot of people didn't know that. But after the presidency, he spent his final years in Gettysburg. And one of the cool things...
You want to know where I learned about Eisenhower being involved in some way with Gettysburg?
Yes, I do.
The gift shop. Because that's where I spent most of my time. So I wanted to get y'all's historical analysis before I just talked about my own experience there, which was primarily in the gift shop with four kids trying to corral everybody and say, you can't spend more than this. And you're definitely getting a gift here, or a souvenir here, rather than Hershey Park, because I want to have the illusion that we were really paying attention to our history while we were here. So
there's one fact I do want to share about Gettysburg. I thought it's interesting because we have all this talk about monuments and controversies. Yeah. The Virginia State Legislature appropriated 1/4 of their entire budget for their Lee Monument, for the Virginia Monument at Gettysburg, which is a statue of Lee on horseback.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
That's kind of an interesting little factoid.
When was that?
I don't know exactly when, but I think it was like the 1930s, maybe.
So it wasn't this year.
No.
Because <'Cause laughs> we didn't hear about that.
No, but a fourth of their, and it may have been a little bit before that. I don't know the actual date, but people can look that up. But I do remember reading and hearing from a historian that 1/4 of the entire state budget of Virginia was appropriated for a monument at Gettysburg.
Wow.
That's incredible. Well, you know, I actually visited the North Carolina Monument there, which was paid for by the Daughters of the Confederacy. They had a huge placard with their dedication, and the monument itself was the soldiers charging, I guess, in pickets.
Yeah, charge.
Pickett's charge.
If you're in North Carolina, it's not just Pickett's charge, it's the Pickett-Pettigrew assault, because General James Pettigrew was a professor at UNC Chapel Hill. He was a literature professor there, I believe, and then rose in the ranks of the Confederacy after the war started. And so, people always talk about Pickett and Pickett's charge and how so many Virginians were killed, but North Carolina had a major loss of life at Gettysburg.
Yeah, I read somewhere there, I think that on that North Carolina monument property, that 1/4 of those that passed away during that were from North Carolina.
Yeah, I think that's right. I want to give a shout out to my alma mater, Ole Miss, because I think the entire student body that was still alive by the time Pickett's charge, they were involved in Pickett's charge. They either died or were severely wounded during the charge. So it was pretty dramatic for the university itself, too. They lost its entire student body during that charge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, significant loss of life and just sobering to even think about. So, you know, I mentioned the gift shop and things like that. But in reality, as we walked around and looked at the monuments and just reflected on really what happened on that land, it was sobering. And And I'm glad I got to take my kids to give them some more insight into really the high price of war. My husband went to Afghanistan. He's been in both OEF and OIF, but you know, sometimes it's easy to just get tunnel vision and think of the here and now, but all of the bloodshed that happened even that many years ago, yeah. We need to be mindful of that, especially when we're in this highly political environment. Everything's very charged, and keep some perspective. It's important to keep some perspective and not let things escalate and actually have civil discourse and dialogue and promote that. And that's, I know, something we really care about in Civitas. So, yeah.
And by the way, if you're watching on Facebook Live, you're probably not hearing Brooke as she talks. So I just want people to know that. She's saying really insightful things, but you'll never know that until you listen later. Come back and listen later if you want the full podcast, or you can listen to it on our website at a later date. So you're missing some great things that Brooke is saying.
Yes, you are. The end. But yeah, so I wanted to hear from both of you on what has been dominating the headlines, whether that's rightly so or not, it still is an important issue. But that's the whole Kavanaugh confirmation. And so we're in, what is this, week three now of this whole process and the accusations and all that stuff. So
I mean, this is just the more dramatic part of it, is week three. I think that All in all, since he's been announced, we're on day 86 or something like that.
Yeah, he was announced at what, the end of or middle of July.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I meant. That ever since the talks of bringing Dr. Ford in and her giving her testimony. But we haven't discussed that. Did either of you get to see parts of Kavanaugh or Dr. Ford's testimony?
I've seen parts of them, parts of each of them. I didn't watch them live because unlike apparently the rest of America that day, I was doing work. Instead of watching television, but I have seen
some
video.
Isn't that technically work, though? I mean, we have to stay in the loop.
I mean, I suppose technically. But, I said it's last week. I was on Front Row, which is a television show, a political television show on UNC TV, which I'm on again this week. But I said that we witnessed the death of the U.S. Senate's reputation as the greatest legislative body in the world. And I think I still think that was the case, because this whole hearing, not just what has happened with Dr. Ford, that has made it worse, but even starting with the reactions of Democrats to the initial Kavanaugh announcement, where they immediately discounted him. And then, you know, let's delay the confirmation. Let's talk about it even more. Well, 3 hours after he was announced, you said you were going to vote no. What more is there to talk about? And it's turned into a circus. And I think that, you know, if Henry Clay were still around, or Daniel Webster were still around, or those sort of actual lines of the Senate, as opposed to Ted Kennedy, they would be ashamed to see what the Senate has become today.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right. I mean, Henry Clay, who had that famous quote, "I'd rather be right than president." We see this Senate body. I think what's so depressing for me is kind of looking at the behavior of just United States senators, particularly on the left. I mean, some of the just accusations that are thrown out and then are corroborated. I think one of the most irresponsible aspects of this, and this is just, you know, a sad part of the culture we live in, but the irresponsibility of the media and flinging around some of these accusations, to me, that has been disheartening. The way people run with it, the way senators actually run with it and use that and propel that into the debate that we're having, I think is just very unfortunate. And kind of watching his wife during those hearings, that's kind of what stood out to me. She just looked sort of crestfallen and just sort of heartbroken to an extent of everything that's going on. And to me, you almost saw a bit of just anger, but also fatigue in her.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, her and her family have been...
My heart was breaking for her. Could you imagine? I mean, it's worse to be accused of murder than sexual assault, you know, if it's not true, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think her family has sustained numerous death threats. I mean, as a mother, I'm sure that that's also rolling through her mind, and just the way her husband's character is being and has been assassinated. It's just... I'm sure exhausting doesn't even begin to describe it. But it is, some people have likened it to a circus. I read in the Chicago Tribune, one of the writers there said, no, it's more like a Colosseum. Roman mob is calling for his death, and they're just merciless. It's insane. And so I don't know if either of you saw that editorial cartoon. It was by this cartoonist, Chris Britt, and it's a picture of Kavanaugh's daughter praying.
Yeah, it was pretty shameful.
And so it says, "Dear God," it's his daughter beside her bed. And if you remember or you watched the confirmation hearings, you heard Kavanaugh describe that his daughter's prayer the night before the confirmation hearings this latest one, and she's just asking God to move in Dr. Ford's life or bless her and things like that. And so this cartoonist took that and made a cartoon that said, "Dear God, forgive my angry, lying, alcoholic father for sexually assaulting Dr. Ford." And I just thought that is the epitome of irresponsibility, but also mercilessness. Like poking fun of his daughter, bringing her into this. Like there is no, there are no lines anymore when it comes to what the left or just people that are ideologically driven so much that they won't cross. You know, that they're happy to cross some lines that before we at least acknowledge.
Well, this process is no longer about governing and actually finding a Supreme Court justice and making sure that the court functions in the way that it should with nine justices. This is now about who can get the, you know, the big political win to win elections this year and again in 2020. And Washington itself is a circus and a show because people only care about how they can create the next administration and not actually make the country better for anybody. That is absolutely awful, and it bullies not only Brett Kavanaugh, but it bullies his daughter. It makes his daughter now a victim. Congratulations, mm-hmm. cartoonist, you have picked on a little girl.
Right.
And then it picks on his faith, and her faith for that matter. Can people no longer talk about their faith publicly anymore? What have we done to society where we can't even do that? When children can't even innocently say, "Hey, I'm a Christian, I believe in God, and this is what I do in my private time by my bed before I go to sleep."
Right. Well, I think this stems from a belief that conservatives are second-class citizens. I think that that's the way the ultra-left and those that are ideologues have begun to try to cultivate in the public this sort of unconscious, subconscious view of conservatives that they are less than, or that they're plebeians and things like that. So they justify it. They feel justified in making these accusations and crossing these lines. It's a shame.
I think that's exactly right. If you can go after Brett Kavanaugh, who's an esteemed attorney, you know, has been on the second highest court in the land, what the D.C. circuit's referred to. If you can go after him, you can pretty much go after anybody. You can tar and feather anybody in the public square. And I think, because, I mean, we're talking about a guy who, you know, wasn't aligned with Trump. He was a Bush Republican, kind of mainstream conservative justice. And the way that they have maligned him, in my opinion, just shows that they're willing to go after anybody. They're willing to target anybody. And I think in some ways it's sort of a dress rehearsal for the chaos and mob rule that, you know, could be coming in the future. And so I think that's one reason why, you know, you could be against confirming him or for confirming him. But in my opinion, that's one reason why you should confirm him, because I think you have to stand up to sort of the bullying that has gone on and say enough is enough.
Mm-hmm. Do both of you think that he will, in fact, be confirmed?
I actually do, although it's hard to predict, you know, anything in this news cycle now. But I would say by Saturday there will be a vote, and I think it'll probably be like 53-47.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's about right. I think a couple of Democrats will come across, and I think he will be confirmed. They're going to block the filibuster. And it, you know, this whole thing is just an absolute... It's just a travesty. But, you know, what we're seeing today is Chairman Grassley has put out a statement on, you know, his reading of the report. I think it's interesting that of the FBI investigation, there are only two copies of the report. One is at the White House and the other one is in a safe in the committee room in the Senate, because they don't want anybody leaking the report out. And they have a printed schedule of when senators, only senators, not staff, are allowed to go in and read the report. So there will be no leaks. And if there is a leak, then, you know, it was a senator.
Yeah, and the good news is senators don't really know how to use iPhones. Having worked in Washington, most congressmen and senators have no technological, you know,
so that would have been a staffer that would have been capable of it anyways. Right. Okay. Smart thinking then. That was a good idea that they locked it up like that.
I mean, I worked for a congressman, great guy, but he didn't even know how to send an email.
Oh, my goodness. Ladies and gentlemen, this is who we're putting in office.
Hey, Governor Cooper sent 6 emails in 16 years of being attorney general, so...
Wow.
We'll see.
Yeah, I guess there's something that we should, I guess, maybe investigate this a little bit more and maybe poll it. How technologically savvy do you believe your elected officials are? And then we could do like a public records request or something.
Well, clearly the president's very technologically savvy.
Oh, he knows
the most powerful Twitter account on earth.
He knows his way around Twitter, that's for sure.
At least Twitter. I don't know about Facebook.
I haven't seen much there, but...
You think he's got a Tumblr?
I don't want to speculate, but... did you guys get a text message from him yesterday?
I was so excited.
Major month, didn't it?
all of my month.
It was interesting to see just some of the reaction on social media from the text. People were actually triggered and were angry about the text. And to me,
it wasn't even really a text.
And it wasn't from the White House, I don't think. Yeah, it was just from some other government entity.
I heard that 3/4 of all Americans actually received that on their phone, which I thought was interesting because that I'm sure some kids were getting it since so many children have iPhones and things like that nowadays.
Right.
And we're probably wondering about that. But anyways, I thought that was funny. Everybody made sure to take screenshots of their phone after they got that presidential text. I didn't post mine yet online, but I'm saving it for a rainy day. But anyways, okay, well, let's switch gears because, Donald, you attended and were in a debate yesterday put on by the Institute of Political Leadership in North Carolina, and it's actually going to be airing on Spectrum News this weekend. But can you tell us a little bit about that debate?
Sure. So IOPL, the Institute of Political Leadership, has been around, I think, for 30-something years in North Carolina, and typically what they do are provide training sessions for people who are looking to get into politics, whether that's to be a political consultant or an actual candidate for office. Over the past few years, they've decided to do these, what they're calling hometown debates, on a variety of issues. Last year, there were 4 different debates on education, about charter schools and school funding, that sort of thing. This year, they're doing 4 hometown debates on 4 of the 6 constitutional amendments that will be on the ballot in November. And they're called hometown debates because the debates aren't in Raleigh or Charlotte or Greensboro, the big cities in North Carolina. They go out to small hometown-type places. And I think the first one was last week on the judicial selection amendment in Salisbury. And the one that I was in on Thursday of this week was in Washington, North Carolina, Little Washington, on the Inner Banks of North Carolina.
Cute little city or little town.
Oh, it is. It's an adorable little town. Mm-hmm. And it was on the voter ID amendment. And it was a good debate. It was an hour-long debate. It'll be on Spectrum News, to your point. Loretta Beniti is the moderator, or was the moderator of the debate, and she has a show on the weekend called In Focus. And so the debate will be her show. Not the full debate. After her show airs, the full debate will be put online if you want to go see it. But I thought it was a good debate. Myself and Representative David Lewis from Harnett County represented sort of the pro side of the debate, pro amendment. And then Dr. Creighton from the Southern Coalition for Social Justice. I forgot. That is a long name of an organization.
It is.
And then Senator Erica Smith. Both represented sort of the con side of the debate. And I thought it was a good, generally civil debate, but I felt like we landed a lot of blows. And there were just a lot of questions about the integrity of the electoral process that opponents of voter ID just can't answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and I think part of the one of the good arguments for voter ID, but it seems like those that are against it still aren't getting it through their heads. They still use these talking points that this disenfranchises voters. But it seems like there's been studies done that indicate otherwise, that a voter turnout actually goes up among certain minorities, if not all, or at least there is no significant difference in voter turnout with the implementation of voter ID. Is that right?
Yeah, at worst. There have been a lot of studies going on, but at worst, the studies are absolutely inconclusive on whether turnout goes up or down, or if there's any effect on turnout at all through voter ID laws. What we do know is that there are a lot of North Carolinians and Americans that are concerned about the integrity of the electoral process. And, you know, 2 arguments I continued to make last night that there was no answer for was, at this point, it's 42 days ago in North Carolina, there were 19 foreign nationals that were indicted on charges of voting illegally in North Carolina in the 2016 election. Them having a legitimate North Carolina ID would have solved that problem. And then after the 2012 election, the State Board of Elections found that 35,000 people on the voter rolls of North Carolina were double registered, and which means they were also registered to vote in another state. I'm not saying that all of those people double voted, but there is the possibility that, you know, somebody could have voted early in North Carolina and then gone to Virginia and vote. Well, they couldn't have voted early or voted in Virginia if they had a North Carolina license because Virginia has voter ID. Mm-hmm. But they could have gone to another state that doesn't and voted there if they were registered there. There's nothing to prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, people say, well, it's not widespread. Well, it doesn't matter if it's widespread. If you steal the legitimate vote of another person, they've been disenfranchised. But furthermore, you know, it just takes one vote to entirely swing an election. There was a Virginia House of Delegates seat just last year that was decided on a coin toss. And the way that went, it went to a Republican, the coin toss did, and that determined whether or not Republicans had a majority in the House of Delegates in Virginia or not. I think people believe that Speaker Tim Moore in North Carolina, Speaker of the House of North Carolina, would be much different than a Speaker Darren Jackson. And they need to figure out, you know, that's the power of one vote.
Yeah, absolutely. That drives it home, that Virginia example, because oftentimes we think of elections as being won by scores of votes by and large, or, you know, I don't know. There, a lot of times we think of elections as kind of just the irrefutable evidence that, you know, the majority of a populace wants one particular person. But hey, even thinking about the Bush and Gore elections, you know, these things can come down
But Bush Gore, 537 votes in the state of Florida. I mean, it doesn't take much at all.
All the more reason that if you've got 35,000 people that could be voting in this state that really shouldn't be because they're living somewhere else or vice versa, there's a lot to be said about that. And Ray, a lot of our polling indicates that that the people want this, right?
Yeah, I find it fascinating too, is that this, you know, this controversy gets drummed up in every state. I mean, I'm from Mississippi, so they have a constitutional amendment. They're the other state with the voter ID constitutional amendment. And, you know, there was this big hubbub in protests and people talking about disenfranchisement. And then after it gets passed, it kind of just dies out because I think most people realize it's a common sense issue. It doesn't disenfranchise anybody. Minority voting actually upticked in Mississippi a little bit after voter ID. So to me, I think it's just one of those issues that will actually go away in North Carolina. We can finally be done talking about it because every other state where this, you know, there's an initial sort of panic about voter ID, and then it just sort of fizzles out once it passes.
Well, do you think it will go away here, or do you think we're preparing ourselves for a lawsuit after this passes?
Well, I think that there will be court lawsuits to some extent just because that's the name of the game in North Carolina, but I don't think that they'll be successful.
Well, I think that the interesting part of that conversation is, will the lawsuit be on the implementation of the amendment and the implementation legislation, or will it be on the amendment itself? If there is a court challenge to the amendment itself, then and a federal judge rules against the state constitutional amendment, then federal courts will be saying states can no longer run their own elections, which changes the entire electoral process in America, and you will see a major backlash on that.
Absolutely. So stay tuned, you guys. And I guess we'll be revisiting this and the implications of it come November and seeing how all this pans out. But I was there at the debate as well. I thought it went great. I think, you made some excellent points. So did Representative Lewis. And I encourage people, tune in, know what you're voting for, but be aware because there's a lot of spin. And I would say there has been a lot of money poured in from the outside to vote against these amendments, particularly voter ID and some of the others. Some of you may have even heard of the Nix All Six campaign, as if voters aren't smart enough to be able to figure out which amendments they may support on their own merits. Right. You know, it's just them taking for granted that, you know, everybody's just going to naturally fall in line on the left. And I think voters are, at least if our polling is any indication, are thinking for themselves and not just taking their orders from higher up. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But also, the General Assembly just had a special session this week as well in the wake of Hurricane Florence. There were some takeaways from that, but they're actually going to be revisiting or resuming their session again after they have refined the aid package, I guess. But anybody know how much they actually...
They allocated $56 million so far.
Okay.
People shouldn't think that that is the final package. That is all the aid North Carolina will give. Nor should they do what I've heard people on the left say, which is they should just drain the entire rainy day fund, which is $2 billion. You shouldn't spend all $2 billion because you don't know if there's going to be another hurricane or if there's going to be a wildfire.
Well, then we just raise taxes, right?
Right. Or if there's going to be an economic downturn next year. You shouldn't spend everything you've got, but you should have it in case of emergency. And so they'll spend more, but the initial $56 million was just to take care of needs that they knew that they could absolutely meet right now and also meet payroll for a lot of those school districts that, you know, teachers still, I think there are something close to 100,000 students that still aren't back in class yet. Wow. And so those teachers need to get paid. And the General Assembly thought it was reasonable. I think it's reasonable as a small government guy that those teachers be paid because they can't help that hurricane hit and their livelihoods depend on it. Mm-hmm. And so they're going to come back, I think, in 2 weeks and get a better assessment from the governor's office about sort of what infrastructure needs to be rebuilt, how much that'll cost, and then they'll determine, how much the state can afford to pay into it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this will disrupt the elections at all? What are y'all's thoughts on that?
I don't think so, but I do think that, the one disadvantage is it could affect turnout in a few counties. So I think that's just something to watch. And some of those counties, of course, are conservative voters. So that's just something to monitor. Will it have an impact on, because when you're dealing with stuff in a crisis and still dealing with that, I mean, voting's not the thing that's, the first priority on your mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one thing that the General Assembly has started in the process of doing is one, extending the voter registration deadline in counties that were impacted. I think they pushed it back by something close to a week, if not a week, in the counties impacted by Hurricane Florence. And then I know Representative David Lewis, who's in the debate with me last night, but handles a lot of the election legislation that comes out of the House, is talking about expanding the early voting hours in those counties, because if people are having a hard time, if they had applied for a vote by mail ballot or something like that, well, that ballot's underwater mm-hmm, yeah. right now. And so they might need more hours to accommodate those, technically absentee ballots, but voting in person that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have you guys been keeping up with any of the private organizations, charities that have been helping during this hurricane relief? Any thoughts on how that's going? And
well, I do know that I gave a little bit to Anglican Disaster Relief, and they've done a really good job of meeting needs, sort of immediate needs of people in that area, and the other denominational church groups that, their expertise is disaster relief. They've done a really good job of, from what I've heard, of meeting the needs of people. I know that they've helped people with their chainsaws or, helped equip them with chainsaws, train them with chainsaws if they had to do some clearing. And, there's Salvation Army, from what I've heard, has done a pretty good job meeting needs. And also, was it Barbecue? They did a really good job.
Operation Barbecue Relief.
Yeah, out of Missouri. They mm-hmm. did a really good job of meeting needs right after the storm. I mean, you saw the styrofoam containers on some of the news clips and stuff. And so that was impressive. And I think a lot of these organizations, they've become better and more, I think, skilled to meet immediate needs after things like Katrina and Harvey. The more hurricanes they go through, the more experience they have, the more resources they have, and they're really equipped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So we will, if you've been impacted by this hurricane, we would like to hear from you. If you've got some experience on the ground dealing with some of these organizations or applying for FEMA, I know some people that have been applying for that sort of relief. We want to hear how it's going. So go ahead and reach out to us. Shoot us an email at radio@nccivitas.org. Or if you're watching through Facebook, comment or send us a message because we're curious. We care about how that part of the state is doing, how you all are recovering, and we want to keep tabs on that. But we're about out of time. Any closing thoughts on either Kavanaugh or the General Assembly session or the voter ID?
Well, I think one closing thought is it'd be interesting to watch, and I know Donald has mentioned the Tennessee Senate race as being an important race to watch, but there's a lot of races in Missouri, North Dakota, and some of these red states, or traditionally red states, where Democrats have they've done well, but they're behind a few points, or these races are dead even. It'll be interesting to see for me if this Kavanaugh thing bleeds over into the election and into the November elections, and if there's some fallout. Do the Republicans pick up a couple more seats in the Senate because of this Kavanaugh, or is there a backlash if he's confirmed and they lose a couple more seats? So I think that's just fascinating to watch. I think if you're a Republican, you want them, because the House is in such danger, you want them to hold the Senate and for possible future nominees to the court. So that's just something I think anybody should be watching, is what's going to happen in the U.S. Senate. Will they retain control? Will Republicans pick up a seat or two? Because you have like almost seven or eight races that are really, really tight.
Yeah. Any thoughts too, Donald?
No, I think he's spot on about the Senate races. Polls that have come out this week show that a lot of those races have really tightened up, particularly in Indiana and Missouri. And we should definitely keep an eye on that. There was a Marist PBS and NPR poll that came out this week that showed particularly or Republicans have seen a lot or have a lot more enthusiasm to come out and vote than what they did back in July when this poll tested that before. And actually, Democrat women, you've pointed this out earlier today, Brooke, that Democrat women have actually lost some enthusiasm through this process. And so, you know, we'll see. And I also think it's a little dangerous politically for Governor Roy Cooper, who wants to break the supermajorities in the General Assembly, to keep the General Assembly in session doing disaster relief legislation as they inch closer to the election, because it just makes the Republican legislature look, you know, like they're handling the disaster.
Right. That's a good point. Very good point. So those are our closing thoughts. Well, I let them have it because we're about out of time. So I'll get my closing thoughts next session. You guys have a great day. Thanks for joining us. And go ahead and listen to us online at ncivitas.org. Thanks.
Yes. Thanks a lot.